Today on the Cam and Journal podcast, we're joined by Gay Kick. She is a author of a book called Releasing Religion, a memoir about her being a pastor's wife and then escaping and, quote, living life on her own terms. She got married super young and did all of these things, and I grew up religious, and I just before this recording talked with someone who grew up Mormon in the UK. So today's a day of religion. That's what we're doing here. So this will be a fascinating story about escaping from that and all those experiences, which I think will be interesting. I know growing up evangelical myself that's a very odd and interesting dynamic that a lot of people who didn't grow up that way or live that way don't understand. So welcome to the Cameron Journal podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yes. Well, thank you for joining us. So why don't we start from the very beginning? Tell us a little bit about yourself and about your book, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, I am, let's see. Okay. So let me just start here with about the book here for a moment.
Yes.
Because that will let you know a little bit about my background. So I married someone that I barely knew. Oh, let me rephrase that. I foolishly married someone that I barely knew. I was a freshman in college. I had a, my goal was to become a public school music teacher. I had a music scholarship. I had an Illinois teacher's grant. I played the piano, the clarinet, the bass clarinet, and I was a classically trained high soprano before I ever got to college. So the first day of classes, I meet a senior music major, and 6 months later, he proposes, wants to get married right after his graduation, which is just a couple of months away. I wasn't real sure about that, but I just had this gut feeling that if he didn't marry him, I was going to miss something really big. I never expected that right before the wedding, he was going to change his career and toss me unprepared into the role of minister's wife at the age of 18.
Oh my, what was he supposed to do?
He was going to be a music teacher. I thought I was marrying a music teacher.
Okay. And then all of a sudden, yes.
Right.
My Nana had the same thing happen. She got with a guy who was a geologist and was doing forestry and all this type of thing and switched to accounting. She calls it bait and switch. He's like, I did not sign up for accounting. I signed up for geology.
Yes, exactly. I was not prepared to be a minister's wife. And he not only had one church, but he had two.
Oh, my.
He was a student pastor. He was a licensed lay speaker. And apparently was a licensed lay minister too, that I just like, I don't know, skipped that, I guess. So I just wasn't expecting this at all. So he has two churches. And then the high school, two different churches in two different towns. And then the high school, which is between the two towns, they don't have a music teacher that year. And they discover that he has his degree to teach music. So he's also now a teacher. So he is in seventh heaven. He's got this career going into ministry, and he has two churches. He's using his music degree, and so he's in seventh heaven. And I have lost everything that I wanted. I've lost my music scholarship because I'm too far away from the university, and I don't have my own car to get there anyway. I have to repay the teacher's grant, so I have to get a job. The only job I can find is in a factory. I'm living in the proverbial fishbowl right next to one of the churches, and I have no idea what I'm doing. So I try to be who I am expecting that everybody else is expecting me to be. And I'm surprisingly very good at that because I'm friendly, I have a good sense of humor, I treat people with respect. And it kind of goes well, except that I am hiding the fact that I am not happy to be a supporting character in somebody else's life plan, or to be in competition with God by with my husband's attention. So the day after the wedding, this is what's interesting. It's the day after the wedding, I am sitting in two church services watching my husband preach, and I'm not even on a honeymoon. I'm wondering, what has happened here? Why am I not, you know, frolicking about with my husband the day after the wedding? Instead, I am sitting in the church alone by myself, which is what I did for the entire time that I was married to
him. Yeah. So let's fast forward a couple years. So he's doing this, he's have all this type of thing. You've got stuff to repay in your own life to sort. Take us 10 years down the road. What happened?
Okay, 10 years down the road, by that time I have 3 children. We have moved from place to place to place to place for him to finish seminary. We left that first church. We were only there for a year and we had the 2 churches. And then we moved to Kentucky. So he started going to seminary in Kentucky. That lasted a year. Then we moved back to Illinois. He had another church position. Then I'm pregnant with our 3rd child. He goes off to Indiana from Tuesday through Friday to go to seminary there. I am at home by myself with 1 baby, 1 child, and another one on the way. And then we move back to Kentucky, moved a couple times there, have another church there. And then he finally finishes seminary and I come back to Illinois. At that point, then my parents have moved to Florida. So they're, right. You know, they're never around. He's never around. At that point, then I'm older, I'm wiser, I'm starting to read a lot of books, self-help books, and books out of the ordinary for a minister's wife to be reading. Shirley MacLaine, Out on a Limb, books about Edgar Cayce, Richard Bach, Illusions. I'm at a place where I start to realize that, I mean, I'm not happy in the marriage throughout the whole thing.
Right.
But by that time, I'm starting to think for myself. And eventually we are at a church where we have what we call well-intentioned dragons. And that's when I get to a point where, you know, I am really tired of this. I'm really tired of being a minister's wife. I want to swear like a sailor. I'm tired of, there's nobody to talk to. You can't tell anybody in the church that you're not happy with your husband or with, you know, being a minister's wife or any of that, because then the whole town will know. So there's nobody to talk to. And I get to the point where I realize that I have to take control. That's where the self-help books come in. They're my mentors say.
And, no, that leads into my next question. How did you break out, and how did you reach escape velocity?
It was the self-help books when I finally realized that, you know, I do not. Okay, let me just see. I'm starting to question at that point. I already was kind of questioning religion along the way, but I was starting to really question it at that point. And the self books helped me with that. I'm just kind of scattered here now, not knowing what I was going to be having to talk about.
That's okay. It's just conversational. This happens. It's fine. It's totally fine.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, it was, you know, so this is what I'm learning. If I want to change anything, I can't expect other people to change. I have to do it myself. I am the one that has to change. I have to be the authority of what is best for me, nobody else. And as far as the big theme throughout the book is always being concerned of what other people are going to think of me. Trying to be who I think everybody else is trying, wants me to be or needs me to be. When I need to be me, I need to put myself first. And I start to realize as well that I have to let go of beliefs, not, you know, beliefs that my parents have taught me, society has taught me, school, people, whoever, peers. But the big thing that I have to release is religion, because that's the one that said, marriage is for life, which is why I stayed in it for so long. That man is the head of the house. That the woman's job is to make sure that her husband and her family are all happy. And then just the other things in church. I mean, I never considered myself as a sinner, so I never thought that I was going to go to hell. But that's what was being taught. Now, the churches that I was in, it was United Methodist, so it wasn't real conservative. There was no stuff about us being sinners or anything like that. I got that from in the 1970s with the Jesus movement that was really big at that time.
Yes.
It took me 20 years to finish my college degree, which I switched to English, and it took me 5 colleges to do that because we moved so many times. I was absolutely determined that I was going to get my degree.
So let's get to this inflection point because it should be good. When you decided I'm done, what was that conversation like?
I didn't want to be the one that said I wanted a divorce. I was waiting for him to do it. And then at one point he did say that he wanted a divorce. And a week later he decides, no, he wants me. Well, crap.
I was so close.
Yeah, was so close. I just didn't want to be the bad guy. Right. And that's really when the self-help books came in. Why marriages end and how to get rid of yours or how to end yours. Those kinds of things that gave me the strength and the courage to actually, then I finished the school. I finished college and kind of met somebody there.
Yeah, the fastest way to get over the person you had is to get under somebody else. So yes, that's, but I mean, that was all, I mean, that was all, I mean, I think people forget that was all very trendy. I mean, I imagine we're talking about the late 70s, early 80s, perhaps.
In the 80s.
Yeah, there was a real movement at that time because so many women had your experience, you know? And so there was kind of this big movement to be kind of like, yeah, your feelings matter too. Your happiness matters too. It doesn't always have to be about the husband and all this type of thing.
Right.
And you did have the rise. And I think also people forget self-help didn't really exist before then. So all of a sudden there was this huge movement of all these, you know, my Nana talks about this a lot because she was going to these conferences and these things and, you know, has, you know, everybody you want to know, she like met them in their early days and all this type of thing. And so there was all of a sudden these new books, this new literature, this new way of looking at life that I think really helped people kind of break out of that repressive 1950s shell that everyone had been living under. And that was, we're kind of very used to it today. It's become normalized, but it was new at the time, you know? So
there was.
Yeah. So I imagine that was also maybe a bit odd. You're like, I don't know, divorce, met somebody, you know, all this type of thing. Husband's like, yeah, I want to, maybe not. So how does this little party eventually start to go home? Like, how do we break up this little party?
That's so funny. Well, he got to a point where he kind of decided that he didn't want to be a minister anymore. And I was in my last semester of college, my music degree, or with my English degree. And I didn't know what was going to be happening after that. I'd met people at college who knew me as just me. And that was wonderful. And I absolutely was not going to go back into the ministry. But we had three kids at that point. So we had to stay together. We couldn't stay in the church house.
Right, right.
Another minister was going to come in and take over that. And so we had to stay together for a while, until, you know, I got a job, and then he got a job, and then he went back to teaching music. And eventually it just, you know, I said, enough, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. What were those first few years being away from all that like?
Oh, what a relief. Now, what I haven't told you is that what I did start writing about, I started writing humorous short stories about my life as a minister's wife.
Oh, I bet that was hilarious, because there's just moments of hilarity along the way.
Yes, absolutely. Because because it's humorous. All those, being a minister's wife is surprisingly lonely. There's nobody to talk to. And I always felt that people needed to understand what a minister's life was really like. But I don't know, for some reason, when I started journaling about people in the church and stuff, I was making them much bigger than what they really were. And they ended up being, I ended up laughing at what I, you know, I had changed my perspective, kind of like how a comedian can take something that's more negative and turn it and twist it around until people are starting to laugh about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, when I write, it just comes out funny. It was not I wasn't trying to do that. I just kind of went, oh my gosh, I think I'm writing humor. Yeah. So I joined a writer's group, not knowing that we were supposed to bring something every month, and that we had written, and then the head of the group would take it over to the local newspaper. And so the first time I go there, I find out that we have to do this. And I'm like, I'm not going to write under my own name. I write stuff about being a minister's wife, and I don't want anybody to know that's me. So she's, no. Oh, that's fine. No problem. Just write it under a pen name. So every month I would go to the group, and they'd send it off, and mine were always the first to be in the newspaper because they were funny. Somebody in church came up to me and said, have you been reading those stories by that one minister's wife? And I said, and I'm like, oh my gosh, she knows it's me. And she says, I think the two of you would get along so well. And I said, yes, I think we would too. I've been reading her stuff.
Yes. Yeah, no, she sounds great. Like, it's
so after the divorce, I didn't have the stuff to write anymore because I wasn't in that.
Right.
You know, something would happen, somebody would say something, and then I'd write a story, not about that, but it would trickle something else that I could write about. We lived in houses that had some of the most horrible houses that we lived in. And I talk about that a lot too, because that was a real issue for me.
Right.
Yeah. Being in a house that's owned by somebody else, and I really can't do anything to it. So
the maintenance has been poor, and nothing quite works right, and things don't look right. And
And then the big thing with me was the first house that we had did not have any heat upstairs in the bedrooms. And then there was another house that didn't have heat in one of the bathrooms. And then there was another house that our bedroom was so small, the closet was so small that we were keeping our clothes out in a porch that had no heat.
That's tragic.
So I talk about all of those. But I was in two houses that we had. One, we got the kitchen remodeled, and then the other one, the one that had the clothes out in the front porch, they couldn't figure out how to change the house. And I came up with a plan. I drew it out for them and I gave it to them. And that's what they used. My dad was a carpenter.
Yeah. No, that's very clever. Yeah. So you've now gotten out the divorce seven, you've gotten away, you ran out of writing material because you're no longer a minister's wife. So right. Then what did you do? Where were you working? What was happening?
Oh, I was working. I worked in offices. You know, I'm very organized, like things just so. And so that's what I did. And I the last job that I had was 18 years. It was in a for an association for engineering firms in the state of Illinois.
Oh, very nice.
Yes. So I was the director of administration. Oh, I was writing. I was doing a lot of writing.
Yeah.
But it was all business writing. And then I decided to retire because I wanted to get back to writing. Fun
and
stuff.
And now we have your memoir.
And now you have my memoir. Yes.
That's spectacular.
I originally thought that I was going to take the stories that I wrote about being a minister's wife and just put them in a compilation kind of a thing for a book. But then, you know, and then I just realized, you know, like right before I retired, that my story had become much bigger than that minister's wife story, because I had moved on into metaphysics and New Age and mediumship and all sorts of different things. I was looking for a place for a spiritual life. I still wanted a spiritual life, even though I'd left the church. I wanted a spiritual life. And I jumped from church to church to church to church with my new husband, retired Navy man, much more fun. He I'm followed sure. me along as I was looking for a new, you know, some place where I could still be in church, because I was a music person and I needed the music, and I needed that kind of music, but I didn't want traditional religion music anymore.
Oh, so there's nothing. That's the part that I miss. I grew up in church and I was in the orchestra and I was in choir. My mom was in choir. Nothing. I still love sacred choral music. And people will be kind of like, why are you listening to church? I'm like, the music. I was like, I'm not churched anymore, but the music is fire. Like, you know, yes. And, yes. Yeah, and I missed that so much. And some one of my friends was like, well, you should, you know, volunteer for community orchestra. I said, I am a full-time artist. I run a blog, a podcast. I do videos. I don't have time, but I still miss it. I don't have the time to do anything about yeah. it, but I miss it. And it is something that is, you know, and also the getting together and the aspect of community. I lived in Seattle, where it has the highest ratio of atheists in the country, and people bought an old church and they have the atheist community center. They're like, we want the community, but we don't want the religious part. So they just get together right. and eat and fellowship. No one preaches it. They just get together and do community without the religion. And right. I miss that aspect of it as well. Sometimes, you know,
yeah, yeah. I love the music. I grew up singing the music. My mother was a church organist. She was a musician. I grew up with music. All of my sisters, my older and my younger sister, we all had did music.
Yeah, yeah. No, my mom was the same way. She played bass, clarinet, and piano. Her and I did stuff together. My grandma sang and played piano. My grandma learned piano via correspondence growing up on a farm in eastern Colorado.
Wow.
And they would send her the lessons. They were like 5 cents. It was the 40s. They're like, you know, 1 to 5 cents a one, and you would send away and they would send you the next one. And that's how she learned how to play piano. And obviously, you know, playing, you know, and church was a primary way you could play and do that sort of thing. And so right. and her and I right. would do that. And so it was a huge part of my life. And I was a gigging musician for a while and owned a record label. Music was always a huge part of my life. So I miss it all the time, too. So I totally get that. Totally get that.
Yeah. Yeah. I started singing in church when I was 3.
Yeah.
My old sister was 5. I was 3. We sang O Tannenbaum in German.
Oh, very nice.
At Christmas time. Yeah. So, and then my first husband and I, we had a music ministry. We recorded 2 albums. We traveled around and sang.
Yeah.
I played the piano at church. I played the organ.
That was my career plan until I left religion. I want to be one of those traveling music families. That was my little plot. I was going to go to college for music. And that was the plan. It didn't last very yeah. long, and now I do this, but that was yeah. yeah, that was the plan, that was the plot.
Yeah, yeah. So I searched around for, you know, I went to, and this, so this is so my, you know, my book also has a lot of funny self-reflection. You know, things that I did not say at the time that I said in my head in the book, they get to know what I was actually thinking.
Yes.
And so there's humor in it. And what else? I was going to say something about, the going around from church to church to church. I finally found a place where I finally found Unity. You heard of Unity?
Oh yeah.
Unity. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's where I landed, because I liked the new thought music, and I now write new thought music. I play the piano. I'm the director of music. So I had to have a place. I had to have a place to do my music.
Yeah. No, but I mean, that's a good, and if I ever returned to that life, I would definitely be on the like Unity Unitarian, you know, some ecumenical, yeah. Whatnot. Too. That is about as far as I would go, because I grew up Southern Baptist. So we had the hellfire and the brimstone and the whole, you know, the whole thing. So that's about as, yeah. as, and I've been to a couple, services in that way. I grew up in Colorado, so those churches, especially around the Boulder area, are on every corner. You know, there are lots of those around, and lots of people who, you know, grew up in more traditional denominations left that and then moved to that and that sort of thing. And so there's a lot of old Presbyterian and Methodist buildings that have been converted. As, you know, mm-hmm. the out with the old and in with the Unity, as we would say. And that's a really cool, well, that's just fascinating. I mean, the whole journey and the whole arc and all this type of thing. And what did your kids think of all this? What do they think of all of this?
Well, my kids, you know, I guess they're fine with it. I mean, one still goes to church. The other two don't. They're okay with it. I mean, I don't, you know,
that's good. Sometimes this stuff can lead to like huge family fallout. So I'm glad that's not you. That's really good.
Well, you know, there's, you know, my mom is still, you know, as she's gotten older, she's become a little bit more conservative. And so, you know, we've had some, she's kind of like the nemesis in my books all the way through.
Yes, mothers and daughters, thus shall it ever be.
Yes. I mean, they you know, this is the thing, is that, and I don't think I've said this yet, the Releasing Religion, A Minister's Wife Goes Rogue, that's the subtitle for the book, A Minister's Wife Goes Rogue, because I do. And I have to let go of all beliefs that are holding me back from hindering me voicing myself. There's the parental. I haven't said this already, right?
Nope,
there's parental.
Nope,
okay. Nope. There's, it's hard to remember. There's parental beliefs that I've learned from them, from society, from peers, from school, from teachers. But mostly what I have to release is religion. It's the stuff from religion. As I said earlier, you know, the wife has this job and she can't do this and she can't do that. There are several churches that I went into that would not let me, even though I had taught Sunday school with every grade, they would not let me do it for the adults. I could only teach the children. I'm like, what is this? What year is this?
That's how I grew up. Women, like in the churches I grew up in, women couldn't teach anybody over eighth grade. Like once you hit 12, 13, it had to be a man. That was,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I had to, some of the beliefs, you know, that I had to let go, were also that I do not have to be who everybody else expects me to be. You know, I don't have to be nice to everybody. I am, because that's just like who I am. But I am the only authority of what is right for me. I had to claim that. I also had to realize that that I am more than enough to have whatever I want, whether I'm, you know, female or not. Life happens for us. We can't get it wrong. That was the big thing for me. You know, law of attraction stuff and things like that. I mean, it just, I have a much bigger view of the whole spirit world. now.
No, I mean, I think it's, I mean, and this is something where I say I don't think people understand how far we've come because, and I have, I mean, I always, I look at, my Nana, especially because she came from a generation where you went to college not to get an education, but to find a husband. And which she thought was a little bit absurd at the time, but that was what everyone was doing. It was 1960. That was the, and then, and also to this whole idea of, there are all of these things and these obligations and whatnot, and then to kind of break out of that and to do her own thing. And she did great things. She helped found the organization that invented the processes they use to help children who've been sexually abused is called Blue Sky Bridge. They call her the founding mother because she was on the original board. I think that's very clever. And yeah, and she, and she did that, and they invented, they created the processes that police use to this day to help children who have gone through that, and created systems and processes and conferences and brought in experts and all this type of thing to make that possible. And I mean, she changed in her own way, indirectly, she changed lives by doing that work. By being on the forefront of psychology and all of these things. And that, and she grew up in a generation, a time when women didn't do that sort of thing. And all, and even I even look at my mother 20 years later, and I see all the ways in which other people and other people's decisions had a profound effect on her life. And sometimes I'm kind of like, because my mother is such a force of nature, and it's sometimes odd for me to think that, she could be so affected by those things. But I think people forget it wasn't that long ago that women were really disempowered in our society. Things haven't improved that much, ladies, and I get that. We're still working on it. We got a long way to go. It used to be worse. And it wasn't that long ago when that was, you could be a woman, have your own money, couldn't open a bank account, couldn't buy your own car. And that was, I mean, when my mother grew up in Texas, and she talks about how it was scandalous when they finally let them wear pants to school. It's 1973, by the way. Pants to school, and it had to be a pants suit, not just like jeans. No. She showed me a picture, jacket, blouse, tied, slacks, pressed, the whole thing. I'm like, Mom, you're going to high school. It looks like you're on the way to run General Motors. Like, she's like, no, that because heretofore, women were just not allowed to wear pants at school. It had to be a skirt or a dress. It's 1974. Like, it is just insane. And it's like, you think we have dress code fights now? That's nothing. I mean, I worked for a woman who did a sit-in at her school in the late 70s to get the right to wear jeans. It was a matter of protest. And these things, we think of them as a long time ago. Not really. My mom is still very much alive. She's 67. The lady I worked for who did that in the 70s is very much alive. I worked for her 9 years ago. These ladies are still here who did this and made all this progress. And so I'm not surprised. When you talk about this, change, get these limiting beliefs, it had, I imagine, it was such a big opening for you because you had been piled on with all this stuff that I've just bored telling you about that you already knew. But the listener will find fascinating.
That I experienced myself, yes.
Yes, lived through, all this sort of thing. I imagine that must have been such a huge opening for you. It was about leaving prison,
Yes. And in fact, I mentioned that as well. At one point, it was like this marriage is for life thing is like I'm in prison. I'm in prison. I mean, I'm optimistic, but then, like he was hardly ever around. But the husband and I'd put my kids like down for a nap and then I would just cry because that was the only time that I had to express myself. I had to be like happy for everybody else
Well,
around
and
me.
not what well, I think not only that, you were so young when you got married. How were you to know? I mean, I mean, how what, I mean, and I have a dear friend who married her high school boyfriend, because her and I both grew up evangelical, homeschooled, very Christian conservative, and they both married each other so they could leave their parents' houses because those were not great situations and all this type of thing. And they just got divorced a year ago and had been separated for 2 years before that. And she's, you know, kind of dating this new guy, and she's kind of like, she's like, he's taking me to dinner. I've never been on a date. I'm kind of like, she's like, me and my first husband, we never went out. We were 16, 17, 18. And we didn't grow up in a culture that allowed dating anyway. It was courtship and promise rings and blah, 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 blah. And so she's like, I'm 44 years old. I've never been on a date as such. So me, who actually has had like multiple relationships and dates and blah, 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 I'm kind of like, yes, this is normal. Yes, this is okay. Yes, you'll be okay. Like, you know, because, you know, she's never been on a date in her whole life. And that's, you know, yeah. And that happened to her in like 2001. Because her son was born in 2002. So it's, you know, it's yeah, it's a, you know, it is yeah. a very difficult, is a yeah. very difficult thing.
Yeah.
Because you were young, and how are you to know?
Yeah, and I went through that too. So I'm like, I was 32, 38, I think, when I finished college. And then I met, you know, the new guy, and mm-hmm. who I'm married to now, much mm-hmm. more fun. And my kids then were going to their dad's on the weekends, every other weekend, and I was going out to bars at midnight.
I know. Yes.
I was doing stuff that I didn't get to do when mm-hmm. I was married to the minister.
Oh, I went through that. I got expelled from a private Christian college, and I ended up going to a public college. And my first day, I saw people with long hair riding skateboards, drinking beer, and I might as well have been standing on Mars from what I had known, being homeschooled, growing up in Christian schools, all this type of thing. And someone's just kind of like, here, smoke some weed. Here, have a beer. Have you ever tried a cigarette? Like, everyone was just kind of like, oh, you've never done anything. Let's find all the things for this kid to do, you know, because most people, so she might. Age, I'm 35, they had been drinking and smoking weed since high school. I had done zero of those things. So everyone was just kind of like, here, try this, here, do that. And I'm just kind of, you know, it was a little out of control. I had to kind of bring that back down. But I was used to going to bed at 10 because I had to be up at 5:45 for Bible study. So anything after like 11 o'clock was insane for a long time, you know, like, yeah. Oh my goodness, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. This is, you know, I'm really bad boy, am I? So, yeah. And
that's kind of funny.
Yeah. So in all your years of going rogue and all this type of thing, how do you, I imagine in the right process of writing this memoir, you had a chance to kind of look back with a different perspective. How has your perspective of that time of your life changed in the intervening years?
Well, it was nice to be loved afterwards. Mm. After leaving, it was very nice to be loved.
Oh, that's so good.
To have somebody who, you know, I remember one of the first concerts that we went to, and I kept turning and saying, stop looking at me, stop looking at me. Because he just was, you know, he loved me. And it was very difficult for me at first to get used to all of the attention.
Yeah. Well,
and all the attention is still here. And, you know, it's been, gosh, I hate to say how long it's been. It's been 30 years or so.
Yeah.
I'm much older than I look.
And that's, no, I mean, but that's a good relationship the way it should be. One that uplifts and inspires and brings out the best of you and the best in each other. That's,
Now I did talk when I was writing the book, did have quite a few conversations with my first husband because there were some things I didn't quite remember. I mean, like, why did we do this? You know? And so I got some of the stories were fleshed out because of that, you know, because he was willing to let me write a book about my life.
No,
about our life. But then it's continued on. So, you know, so my current husband is in, you know, comes in the book as well. So you can get to read about that too.
No, that's absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Well, we've reached that point of the show. This has been such a journey. Thank you so much. This has been delightful,
Oh,
and you're
thank you. I've
delightful.
enjoyed this.
Yes, but
Thank
we've reached the
you.
point of the show where we do plugs. So why don't you let us know where people can buy the book and where they can find you online?
Okay, the book, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes and Noble as well. My website is GAYELLENKICK.com. That's my website. That's my blog, actually. So you've got a lot of, I've got like 30 some stories on there. Somebody asked me one time how I get my ideas for writing the stories about my life. And I said, well, it kind of helps to have a husband who does stupid shit.
It does, because that leads to moments of hilarity. Absolutely.
Some of my best stories have him in it. Men Are From Mars is one. Vacation Citation is another. Just
No,
he's
that's tremendous.
really good.
Yeah, and we'll link
So,
that in the description as well.
there are some minister's wife stories in there as well. But for the most part, they're my life now,
Excellent.
those stories.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Cameron Journal podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate that. It's been fun.
That's all for this episode of the Cameron Journal podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Visit us online at CameronJournal.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I love to talk to my followers and listeners, so please feel free to get us on social media at Cameron Cowan on Twitter, and we'll see you next time on the Cameron Journal podcast.